Welcome back to the TV Line Podcast. I'm Editor-in-Chief Michael Osiello. Continuing our Dream Emmy-themed interview series, I'm thrilled to welcome This Is Us leading lady Mandy Moore, whose work throughout season two, but particularly in the heartbreaking post-Super Bowl episode, was, in a word, revelatory. Mandy, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
I rewatched two episodes of season two in preparation for this interview. I rewatched the 20s and the post-Super Bowl episode, which are your finest hours, I feel like, of the season, potentially of the series. And so much attention is on the Super Bowl episode, and I want to get to that. But your work in the 20s is really kind of incredible, too, particularly the scene in the hospital where you first meet Randall for the first time.
Oh,
little Randall.
Thanks.
How challenging is it to have a scene with an infant? And was there actually an infant you were acting opposite? Because, you know, when the camera cuts, we see a baby there, but who knows what you're acting opposite?
Yeah. Honestly, that was one of the more challenging scenes because I think the one you're referring to, it's sort of this weird duality of a monologue where I'm speaking to baby Randall and it's this momentous moment in my life where I'm introducing myself to this child that I've decided to adopt into my family, and then simultaneously I'm also, the mirror image of that is becoming a grandmother for the first time and like speaking to my granddaughter and introducing myself to her. And it was challenging because those were obviously those two interloping scenes were shot at two different times. And it's so difficult, like with obviously laws around child actors. Like you can only get babies on set for a very, very short amount of time, as it should be. So I think you have literally like a 20-minute block, like all together throughout the course of the day to actually use an infant.
Wow.
So I didn't get to work with the infant at all. They only obviously shot the baby for the baby's coverage. So when the camera's like over my shoulder onto the baby, those shots, obviously the child was there for. But all of my work in that scene was to a very unsettling and creepy animatronic baby.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so you're like having this, like purging this super emotional scene, and there's like a man in the corner of the room, like off behind the camera, who's like remote controlling this baby who's sort of like vibrating and like kind of making like these mock weird, they turn the sound off, but you hear like the robotics of the body moving, and it's so bizarre.
Would it not be easier just to have a doll there?
Yes, at a certain point, I think they needed it for like a certain shot, like to kind of just see that the baby was moving, you know, when the camera is sort of on me, but kind of over the baby a little bit. So you saw just a little bit of movement in the background. When they did get closer, they changed it out to just like a baby doll. Yeah. But yeah, they really like threw me through a loop with that one.
Well, it makes it even more impressive of a performance, knowing that, because it's like, I can't imagine how you just shut everything out and be able to just focus on, and you know, sort of transport yourself into this moment. But it was so beautiful and it was so subtle. And the directing in that scene was so good, because you're right, the way they juxtaposed those two moments was really kind
and
of
And find
incredible.
The common ground between them. Yeah.
Right.
I think it all comes down to the words. It always does with a show like this. It's just about family and the human condition and connection. We're so unbelievably lucky that we have, you know, Dan Fogelman at the helm and all of our incredible writers, because it's like, that's all you have to lean on in a scene like that. You know, when you're working with an animatronic baby, it's like, all of that be damned, like as long as what you're saying really lands and means something, then you do the best you can.
How long did it take you to sort of get comfortable in Grandma Rebecca's like skin? Because I have to imagine that was a challenge, at least in the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the movements and, you know, how do you portray someone who's 50 years older than you or 40 years older than you?
Yeah.
How did you come to sort of connect with that particular character and develop the rhythms of it?
I did a lot of just observing people around me that sort of were in that age range, in like their early, mid-60s. I did a little bit of work initially with like a physicality coach, because that was the most daunting challenge to me. Was obviously, you know, I feel incredibly lucky that I get to inhabit this woman in so many different like junctures of her life, but I have no point of reference for what obviously a widowed woman in her, you know, late 60s, who's a grandmother, who's also lost a child, who's remarried, who has adult children, like just so many things that I have no point of reference for. But I worked with this physicality coach initially because I wanted to be able to delineate between, you know, Rebecca as a young mother, and then obviously Rebecca in present day in sort of the prime of her life. Because I feel like she is still very vital, like, you know, mid to late 60s, like somebody's still like very much living their best life. So I didn't want her to feel like an old sort of decrepit woman physically, but I knew that I wanted to sort of feel the difference. So we talked a lot about, and I thought a lot about, like where your energy emanates from. And as a young mother, initially when we first started the show, it's like I imagined my energy coming like directly from my heart and directly from my hands, and this sounds so silly and actory, but as I got older, like the wisdom and clarity that comes with age, like I feel like she stands a little taller, she walks a little like firmer and more confident, because you just know who you are and you don't care as much, you know. But I also just thought about the energy and the wisdom sort of like emanating from the top of her head, like if you took the lampshade off a lamp, how the light bulb just, you know, shines the light directly at the ceiling. I thought about that and just thought about like just making very precise movements, like with my feet. I initially did a little thing where I thought about like maybe Rebecca has a bit of like arthritis in her dominant hand. So I would kind of think about just giving myself something to concentrate on and think about like in scenes. It was the second episode of season one. I had a scene with Ron Cephas Jones. And it was the true test of like whether or not I was going to be able to play this character, and if everybody believed it, or if they were going to cast an actress to play the older iteration of Rebecca. And we had like 10 different hair and makeup tests, and I remember going on set for the first time, and we just were starting the show, and I had only kind of lived on our set and our house, which was on like the stage next door. And here I was like in Randall's home, like pacing the hallway of his home, and Sterling was there like just watching, I think. And I was so nervous, and obviously to act opposite Ron Cephas Jones as well, it was like just jumping right into the deep end. But once I got through that scene and everybody was like, this is gonna work, that kind of gave me a cue and this sigh of relief of like, okay, I guess I kind of can like move forward and I sort of know what I'm doing. And it's just like progressively gotten more and more comfortable, because I feel like there's so much inherent challenge and difficulty. Like the scenes that we've had to do and sort of what we've kind of explored of Rebecca at that age, especially in the first season, was like, you know, keeping the secret from Randall and like keeping the secret alive with William. And then, you know, we're at Thanksgiving dinner where it's all exposed, and then Christmas, and then he's sick. And it was just, I sort of like had no choice but to try and jump in and stay on my A game with everybody else, you know? So now I go through like hair and makeup, and I know it's 3.5 hours or 4 hours to like get into present day, like older Rebecca. And it kind of allows me the you know, sort of zen time to myself to like get in my head and really think about where I am. But for the most part, like all of the other age ranges, I'm like, oh, okay, Milo's getting a goatee at the end, or he's getting a beard. Like it just sort of like helps me get into that frame of mind just simply by like what our hair and makeup is, I guess.
So you were in a way still auditioning for Rebecca, old Rebecca,
yeah,
after you were cast.
But because the crazy thing was, you know, you do a pilot and you have no idea like what the trajectory of the show is. So I had just read that first episode and we didn't know like what the show was going to consist of. We learned pretty early on in the process, like, okay, it's obviously the story of this family, but I thought it was going to be told like linearly. I didn't think that we would be jumping around in time. So about 2 weeks before we started shooting, Dan emailed me and was like, so I have this crazy idea where I think I want you to try and play Rebecca present day. So you'll be in your mid-60s and we're going to get you the best prosthetics and wig and we'll go through the whole process. And if I or any of like the executive producers or powers that be don't buy it 100%, no stress, no worries. Not saying that like you can't do it, but like if it doesn't look right, if it, the show is so grounded that I think their fear, obviously mine was as well. Like I didn't want to sort of stick out like a sore thumb and for people to be like, what am I watching? What? Mm-hmm. It makes no sense. So the idea was as long as like nothing pulled you out of the show, then we would get the go ahead.
So he tells you this. What's your first reaction?
My first reaction was my gut reaction was I was terrified of like messing it up. I was terrified that like I was going like in this otherwise like incredible show with like the storytelling and these performances that I was going to be like the one person who didn't know what they were doing and people laughed at like this bad wig and makeup. And I was just scared that I wasn't going to be able to like step up to the plate and really pull it off. Mm-hmm. So getting through that, like, I mean, we did so many hair and makeup tests. I had long wigs. I had short wigs. I had gray wigs. I had, like, I looked 85. I looked 55. Like, it was such a Goldilocks and the Three Bears kind of situation until we finally settled on what you see on the show. Yeah. And there have subsequently been tweaks along the way even for that. But once we got through that initial scene with Ron and it was like I looked around and everybody kind of like gave me the thumbs up, I obviously was like, okay, I can do this.
So the Super Bowl episode, you get a script like this. What goes through your head when you read the material and you see what is being asked of you?
I remember we were all on set. I was shooting a scene with John Huertas, who plays Miguel, and Justin. So it was like present day. We were in our prosthetic makeup. And these, because like, you know, people have been wondering this gigantic secret about how Jack passes away for the entirety of the show at this point, the script was printed on red paper because that's impossible to photocopy, and they had to hand deliver the scripts to us. So we get these hand delivered scripts to us while we're on set working, and we all like have been chatting and hanging out, and instantly everyone like goes to different corners of the room and like peels it open and starts reading it right away, and we're in tears. Like I'm in tears, and it's a sort of happy scene that we're shooting, so I'm like, I can't read this right now. I felt really excited and daunted at the prospect of what, just the whole thing, the fire and how we were going to shoot it, how we were going to keep the secret. I knew that, you know, everything was there on the page for all of us, that like it wouldn't be hard to get there emotionally, but I also felt really like this tremendous sense of responsibility to deliver on that moment, because it is such a huge catalyst, not just for the show and the audience, but like for this family. Like this is this moment that like everything that sort of happens in the history of this family before and after this moment. So I wanted to make sure that I was able to deliver that properly and feel the weight of it and help the audience feel the weight of it. So I knew that it was coming for a long time, but I didn't know sort of the circumstances around it necessarily, like the candy bar detail and just how it all was going to sort of unfold. But I thought it was beautiful, and I was so excited that, like, you know, we were all going to be on this journey together to tell this like very important episode for this family.
The scene with the candy bar where you're sitting down with the doctor, and it's really amazing to watch all of the shifts that you go through, you know, from everything's fine to something's not right here to anger at this couldn't possibly be happening. Yeah. It's so beautiful what you do, and so subtle. What was it like? How many times did you have to shoot that scene? What preparation did you do? Did you lose anyone in a situation like that where you did go through those emotions?
Thank goodness, knock on wood, I haven't. So I don't really have any like personal real life experience to bring to a situation like this. We didn't shoot a ton of coverage. John and Glenn, who are two of our executive producers and who shot the pilot and shot the Memphis episode, and they're incredible film directors and They did this episode, and so because we have this history with them and familiarity, it was really comfortable, and I felt like I was in, you know, excellent hands with them. They don't shoot a ton of coverage. They know exactly what they want and how to get it, and I think because like there was so much preparation around this particular scene, I was so just in the moment. I remember waking up that day knowing like this is a big day. Because we had a couple of days at the hospital. Maybe that was a different episode. We shot a lot at this one particular hospital. But I knew it was a big day because I had the scene with Milo where we were sitting together, sort of our last interaction while he's alive with the doctor. Then I had the scene with the doctor, and then I had sort of the breakdown scene at the hospital. And then I had subsequently like kind of the rest of the montage-y bits of me signing all of the paperwork and getting his belongings and stuff. So I woke up that morning and was like, okay. Like I felt like I was sort of going into battle a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I just was really quiet. That's kind of what I tend to do for the sort of more emotional stuff. Like I randomly will fixate on one song that I will listen to ad nauseum, like over and over and over and over again. And it's weird, like my brain sort of weeks before or days before, like I'll just be shuffling, like listening to my music on my phone or something. And something, I'll hear a song and I'm like, I'm gonna save that for when I need to get emotional. I'll just be driving and it will elicit something like tears or a sense memory of something. And it's like I store that in my brain going, oh, that song will do something for me. It will help like grease the wheel a little bit. So I remember I fixated on one particular song and I was listening to it over and over.
Do you remember the
song? Yeah. It was a Jeff Tweedy song. It was like from his solo record. I don't actually remember the name of the song now. And it's not even that it's particularly sad, but it just elicited something in me that reminded me of something else. And I just like kept myself in this like quiet, dark, empty, abandoned hospital room and like had my little headphones in and was just listening to the song over and over again. And I was reading the script. And again, I think we have such a great job because so much of it's on the page and we feel such an attachment to this family and these characters. Like we've been telling this story now for 2 years and, you know, at that point, like 30 episodes. And so when I read in the stage directions, like, you know, Rebecca crumples or, you know, she like imagines the story of their life and you think about, I'll get emotional thinking about it, but it's like you see them getting married, you see them meeting for the first time, you see them having their babies, like just the flashes of this life of that this couple shared and just thinking of that's what's sort of like traversing this woman's mind at that moment in time when she's actually like physically locking into the fact that her husband's gone. It's like so much of it on the page, so I would just constantly like reread the, you know, couple pages before the scene and the couple pages after, and it got me there. Yeah.
And then the scene in the hospital where you see his dead body, mm-hmm. was Milo laying in the bed?
Yeah.
For your coverage?
For my coverage. I didn't expect that because, again, we shot our scene together earlier in the day and he was done. So for all intents and purposes, I thought like, okay, no, he's gone.
You're
and
like, bring in the animatronic baby.
Well, I bring the cue the animatronic baby. I just had sort of prepared myself for like an empty hospital bed and I was just going to have to use my imagination to imagine him lying there. And this was, you know, I shot the scene with the doctor and the candy bar after that, before the scene of, we shot it sort of in chronological order, which is never usually the way. So I thought that he was long gone by that point, and I wasn't even thinking that it was in the realm of possibility of him being there. So I am like, you know, rocking back and forth in the dark room listening to music, and they're like, ready for you. And I go to shoot the first take, and I walk in like guns a-blazing, about to be like, how fucking crazy is this, Jack? This doctor just like is trying to tell me that, like, and I walk in and I see his body there.
And you didn't know at that point?
I did not know. And I was just, I was shell-shocked. I was so stunned. I did not. And he's there with like his shirt off, like it had been ripped open and they'd used the paddles. Like, he was just lying there with his eyes open, staring at the ceiling, and I was floored. It was chilling.
And that's the take they used?
That's like the take they used. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't expect it. And we did, I think, like maybe two more takes after that. And they like asked me to go up to him. I'm none of this they ended up using, but like I went up to him. I had to like touch him. I had to talk to him. And he's just like lying there. It was so harrowing. It was really difficult.
When you walk in for the first moment you see him, you do, I don't know if you remember, a head tilt, like a very subtle little head tilt, where I feel like is when it hits you, where this actually, he's dead.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't the doctor fucking with me. This is really happening. And it was just little things like that, I felt like, lent such authenticity to the moment. I don't even know if you remember doing the head tilt. Go back and look at the head tilt. It was great. Big fan of the head tilt. It's just a subtle little thing.
That's kind.
It was...
I don't remember anything about anything. Yeah. You just like, you hope that you can get yourself to the point where you're just like off and running. It's like you're winding yourself up and you're like, well, I don't know what's going to come out. Like, you're... Right. For me and my limited experience, and I'm clearly like no expert, I'm not Meryl Streep, I don't have a process, but it's like I have found that like I just sort of try to get myself to the point where I feel like, okay, this is the best that I'm gonna, you know, this is where I need to be, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then like everything just sort of comes from there. Like, I wasn't thinking I need to cry right here, I need to, because people experience grief obviously in a multitude of ways, and I think it's reflected in her disbelief initially when the doctor's telling her about her husband. That's a shade of grief. That's a shade of disbelief, of not acknowledging, you know, what somebody's telling you. And so I just wanted to try and honor the moment, and like whatever was going to come out was going to come out. I wasn't really in control of it, you know?
Do you feel like you still have something to prove as an actress? Because you started out as a singer, it feels like there can be a double standard, or people can, you know, they picture you in one cubby hole and they, you know, and that's all they see you as. Do you still feel like that?
I mean, I've never been someone that has felt like I'm out to prove something. Maybe it's just because, like, without sounding cheesy, I feel real lucky to have this job and have this opportunity. There are a million talented people out there. And why luck found me and opportunity found me and I have this job, I have no idea. So in that sense, I'm like, and as an actor, it's like all you want is just to have the job. I think where I found myself frustrated was only being seen and sort of, I guess in a sense, like being pigeonholed or like being defined in a certain way. And that prevented me from working. I don't feel like the larger idea of proving something to like the world has ever compelled me, but wanting to show just that one person who would, you know, had the keys to like unlock the door for me. And that happened to be, in this case, Dan Fogelman. Like, he saw something in me that told him somehow that like I was the person to play this woman, and that's what I was looking for. That's what I was waiting is, was like to prove to one person, to just convince one person to like take a shot on me, and that I wasn't just, you know, Mandy the pop star or like the young woman in romantic comedies or something. Like, there were other shades to who I was and my abilities. So I love that this job has afforded me like, you know, new opportunities and for people to just see that I'm an adult now. You know, I'm a 34-year-old woman, and this is the first time I've played a mother and a wife and
a grandma.
So it's like I feel like in that sense it's opened the door and I can do so much more than, you know, even 2 years ago people sort of regarded me as one thing, and now maybe they see a different side.
You and Milo watch episodes together?
We do.
How did that start?
I think as we spend so much time together and we spend so much time at work and, you know, just everything's sort of done on the lot. Like, most of our work is shot on the lot. We shoot on the Paramount lot. And our writer's rooms are there, and our production office and editing and all of it's sort of done there, and Dan's office is there. And so we just, I don't know how it started. Maybe because Dan is like the most, he's the best boss ever, but he's so enthusiastic and so excited to like talk about the show, show you scenes, like come to my office, and he'll like get on his computer and like show you like unedited scenes of stuff that you're not in, by the way. It's like, he's just so excited about everything. So it must have started with Dan's enthusiasm to show Milo and I like maybe something that we were in or something else. And then it just kind of like became tradition when there was a new episode coming up, because for network television, like you are sort of working at a clip. So we'll start out, like we'll start shooting in July and we won't air until September, but we'll catch up very quickly. So
no, I remember like watching your Instagram and I saw like scenes from what turned out to be the finale that aired like 5 days later.
Exactly. Totally. Like by the end, like, you're just like racing to the finish line. So we'll get done with episodes and, you know, like 2 weeks later or something, we'll be watching them in Dan's office like the day before they air. Yeah. And it just is like this fun little thing that we get to do together and like, you know, sit and watch and marvel at how fantastic everybody is.
Are you, do you watch quietly? Does one of you talk a lot during it? Like, what does that look like?
We watch quietly.
Okay.
We like just, Dan has like a little screening room as part of his office. So there's like a couple couches in there and just like a regular TV and someone will like pop in the DVD for us and we'll sit there and like, we know how to work all the TV and all the remotes and stuff now. And we'll just, sometimes we'll bring our lunch in there with us. And yeah, it's like, occasionally we'll like make remarks and laugh about like, oh my god, oh they use that take, oh that's interesting, or but mostly like we'll save our commentary until afterwards when we're like walking back to, you know, our trailer or something like that and talk about what we thought.
So you had a big four-year consideration event last night.
Yes.
And it was revealed during it that scenes from the series finale have already been shot.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Did you know, are you in them?
Maybe.
Okay, regardless of whether you're in them or not, can you say, did the cast know when they were shooting these scenes that these were for the series finale, or it was just like, you know?
Some of us did. I think some of us did and some of us didn't. And maybe some of us still don't recognize or realize, because it was all sort of like thrown in with like a bunch of other work.
Wow, interesting.
It gives me great faith in just the overall project and the fact that Dan and the writers, like, they have to know. They have to, because they have to know how it ends. It informs everything. So the fact that, like, we're not flying by the seat of our pants gives me great just solace and like, okay, we know what we're doing and we know where we end up. And so, like, there are all these little threads of how we'll get back there, I guess.
And as a viewer, I have to say it's very reassuring.
Right?
Because so much you feel like, and it's the reality that they are flying by the seat of their pants and that they have maybe a season or two figured out and then they're just going to kind of wing it as they go along. It's like, we never knew we'd go this far.
He said he always knew too. He always knew how it ended. Mm. And it's beautiful, of course, in like typical Dan fashion. It's like stunning and heartbreaking. But it makes me feel good too that, you know, because I've loved shows sometimes where you're like, oh, they lost the plot, like they lost the thread, and I felt like they knew what they were doing early on and now I'm not so sure. And but I feel like it's such a necessity with a show like this and so many different moving parts and characters and timelines, and like it all has to be leading somewhere and you got to know where that place is.
When do you go back to work?
Mid-July.
Mid-July. Mm-hmm. I got this sense and that when your last day of shooting that everybody is really bummed to leave. And
yeah,
you don't get a lot of that from actors who are on an hour-long drama working such long hours. Usually they're like, ooh, it's summer here, getting out of here. We can't wait for the break. That's genuine, isn't it?
It is. It's, I feel so cheesy to say at this point, but like we really do love each other. And I was just with Dan and he's like, I hope that stays the case for the entire show.
I was just going to say, like, oh my God, I hope we're sitting here from a year from now and it's still the case.
I'm like, I can't see how it wouldn't be the case. Like,
I think like it would have already changed if it was going to change.
Right?
Yes. Once it became a hit, I feel like, if it was going to happen, it would have happened.
It's everyone's lives changed exponentially. Like, no one was left in the dust. Like, we all sort of have, like, gone through, weathered this, like, crazy, incredible, like, gratifying experience together, and we continue to, and it's like we're lockstep with each other and recognizing how tremendously lucky we are to have this opportunity, and it never happens, and it's one in a million. And and they also just did a great job casting. Like, they casted really lovely human beings. They're all terrific performers, and I think they're like the best at what they do, all of them. All seven or eight of us. But I think they're just terrific humans too. They're people that you genuinely want to spend time with, and to be on this journey with them it's just remarkable. They're great. And you know everybody at this point. It's like they're all lovely people and funny and humble, and nobody has an ego. There's not a bad apple in the bunch. We have a group text chain. Like, everyone's excited for all the other stuff that everybody has going on. Chrissy is like a bestseller. Mm-hmm. Sterling's in a bunch of movies. Milo's doing a movie. Like, everybody has such exciting stuff happening outside of the show that we're all like super supportive of. But at the end of the day, it feels like the most important thing to all of us is like this family that we've created and the work that we all get to do together. And that's really cool.
Mandy, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.